We welcome to the show as we do each and every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here, TSN's Dave Poulin, as always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. You can't stay here, but you can't go home, or you can't go home, but you can't stay here. Is that what brilliant? Whatever the call was. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
This is over. That's a brilliant call. I thought that Jordan Binnington was going to be a factor in this year's playoffs. And when we did our little fantasy draft, we picked two goalies each, the four of us in, and Marty Baron picked Ville Husso. And I said on air, Marty, why would you pick a goalie who's not going to be even starting halfway through the first round? And
<Wow. laughs>
I took a little heat. Yeah, I threw that at him right on air.
Nice.
Well, he has a hard time with goalies, and he's a goalie. Like, I don't get it. He doesn't value them in his fantasy drafts. He never takes them early, and so
they're different. Dave, I work with an ex goalie every day, Dave. They're just a little bit. They're wired a little bit different. So
they are. Yeah. They are, and we know that though, JR. That's the secret. Is you have to know that and you have to understand it. I think you very much like me end up being a goalie lover because the goalies all like me because I came back in over the blue line and I won faceoffs, and Zimmer likes you because you set him up perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, all good.
Exactly
all right. Let's start with the Tampa win over Florida last night. Any surprise to you that the Lightning walk in coming off a very emotional 7-game series, so close with Toronto, and then walk right into Florida? And, listen, Vasilevsky was terrific, especially in the first half of the game. But as the game went on, it was like everything kind of tightened up in Florida, and the Lightning showed why they're the two-time Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me. I'm a real believer in that Tampa team and the way they're put together and how long they're put together over guys and how they've added a piece or two every single year to the point where, you get to this year and you see a Ross Colton score a goal last night and you say, so what, Ross Colton, like what, explain Ross Colton. And then you go through him and he's a 2017 or 16 draft pick, a fourth rounder, who's playing in the USHL at that time. And he's playing for Mark Carlson at Cedar Rapids. And then he goes to Vermont for a couple of years, and he spends a couple of years in Syracuse. And now he's a part of a winning culture that he's paid a price to be a part of, and he's learned how to contribute to. And now he has developed a lot of the same characteristics of the team. And it's a perfect addition. And, but then they speed dial at the end of the year, and they only do it with a couple of guys, and they did it with Nick Paul this year and Brandon Hagel, and they immerse those two, but they immerse them into what is really a solidly put together group, a well-constructed group, and some of them have been together for 10 and 12 years, and they've had a lot of experiences together. So I'm not surprised to see Tampa go in and beat Florida. I'm not a... and I say this incredibly respectfully, I'm not a Florida guy in terms of exactly that team. I'm just not. I think they're a little bit ahead of it. I don't think they're quite ready yet. And I know they had a brilliant year, and I know they finished. It's crazy to say because they finished, atop the entire NHL. But in terms of the team and the makeup of them, I just see more in Tampa. So that doesn't surprise me at all. And we knew Kucherov, guys, was sick in game 6 and 7 against the Leafs, and it was that he wasn't feeling well. We had that information that he simply wasn't feeling well, and boy, oh boy, he was good last night. And they're playing without Braden Point as well, but boy, he was good last night.
Pooley, I look at Bill Zito, great moves, but I also say a team that's great offensively, and I watched last night. Is a tipping point having a guy like Reinhardt on your club come playoff time and come on the power play where, to me, he's not built for that and not hard enough on the puck?
I think you're going to have him there, Simmer, as long as he's surrounded. But that power play in itself has been disastrous. I mean, disastrous. They are now 0-21 in the playoffs. And so if he's there, the part that he does so well has to be good. And that's not right now. So when it's not, it's magnified. The other things are magnified. But I think he can be an important part of your team as an overall piece. Not the guy, but he doesn't have to be the guy in Florida. But what he does has to be a significant contributor to the cause. And right now the power play is not.
Let's spin the goalie interference roulette wheel with Dave Poulin on the third Tampa goal, the power play goal by Kucherov, which was challenged by Florida for interference on Cirelli. It was not upheld, and that was pretty much the ball game because they scored again on the subsequent delay of game power play. Where do you come down on whether that was interference or not on Bobrovsky?
I thought it was a pretty good description on air about where Cirelli's feet were and being outside the crease. So if the goalie is leaning forward and, you know, he's in the blue paint, Cirelli's outside the blue paint, and Cirelli's allowed that space, and just by nature, Bobrovsky's head is leaning forward, I don't think that's goalie interference. I think they got the call right, JR. And I know there's been a lot of, you know, different ones during this, and I think that's I think that's a good time to challenge because it's late in the game, and I wonder if it had not been the exact circumstances, if Andrew Brunette would have even challenged that, because he didn't, even his reaction post challenge, it wasn't a Gerard Gallant, you know, you're the crazy referee who didn't give us that call challenge. It was a pretty calm emotion by Andrew Brunette that said, okay, that was worth the risk because of the timing of that goal and the fact that it put you two up, but you know, I didn't think we were going to get that call. That's what it seemed like to me.
Could Florida ever change things tactically, Pooley, or this is what you are now and it's going to be continue to kind of push the offense, or can you clean things up? Well, certainly Mr. Ekblad could.
He could, you know, now you're talking about getting beat one-on-one.
Yeah, no, for sure. Different.
Holy smokes. Yeah. That move was just amazing.
That was the Sean Chambers anniversary, so I don't know if he was trying to duplicate,
you know what?
The move. There was the same swoop, right?
The inside out was remarkable. I mean, that's something you do, you know, against a beer league defenseman, and to do it against Aaron Ekblad amplifies how good Nikita Kucherov is, guys. He has that, like, if you watch him closely, he's got a laissez-faire about him that I'm sure has frustrated coaches over the years. And even the way he delivers the puck, it looks like he's, you know, he's strolling down the sidewalk and all of a sudden there's a bullet pass across the seam right on the tape, but he doesn't look like he's in a position to make it. And even coming in at you, his speed is so deceptive. Deception is a great word to describe him because you don't know how fast he's going. You don't know what he's doing with his hands. You don't know what he's doing with his head. That's a special play to take a player like Ekblad, who's one of the best in the league, and literally undress him like that. And then and Corey Perry's reaction was even funnier, guys. It was like, really? He was thinking about the price he's paid to score some of the goals he's scored. And then the price he paid to score that one was kind of cruising in on the right wing, having it right on his tape, and having an empty net and not getting bumped at any occasion. So, but to your point, Simmer, I think Florida is what there is, they are, rather. I do. I don't think, you know, the danger is trying to change at this point. If they do, they're done. You're not going to go into practice today and saying, okay, we're going to, you know, play a little bit defensive. Now, I would say you're going to say we're going to pay more attention to the defensive system we do play and we do have installed, and that's different. But I don't think you're going to change. And, you know, and I've played for coaches who tried to change too often, even during the course of a regular season, you know. In some cases, it was like, okay, we got beat last night by a really good team. We're going to try and do what they did. Well, that simply doesn't work. You're constructed how you're constructed. I think Bill Zito has done a great job of putting that team together. I just don't think it's a final construction yet. I just don't.
So would Andrew Burnett's greatest challenge as the Panthers coach now be trying to get between his players' ears and not tactically, in that it's like, well, we got beat by this team last year. They've always been the class of this state. Here we go again. Like, that's his challenge, is just to keep his team's confidence up?
Yeah, his team, you know, and they are a confident group, and they should be a confident group. And, you know, it might be to go to their core group. Huberto hasn't been as good as he was all year, and a couple of individuals haven't. But when you talk and you go back, JR, to talk about what Simmer's saying about playing differently, without playing differently, you can focus more on being on the defensive side of the puck, and you can focus more on some of the decisions you did make in the course of the game. That's not changing your system. That's making better decisions within the system you play in. And so, you know, I think that's the case. I still think this series is going to go 6 or 7. I think Tampa has the team to get through this series. I mean, I think Tampa is going to play for the cup again, guys. I just do, you know, and, you know, you're seeing some of their young players, like a Cal Foote, you know, sort of who didn't play a lot last night, but he looks comfortable out there. I don't know if he was banged up last night. They brought Jan Rutta back in the lineup, but it's a pretty well-balanced squad. And I've always maintained through the course of this year that their strength is their defense, as great as their forwards are. And Ryan McDonough may be the, you know, the best second pairing D, and for what he does in the playoffs in the league.
I liked Huberdeau last night, and to run the delays that he runs, he needs the big man in the middle, but it really looked like the little bit I watched in the Cap series, and again last night, Pooley, it feels like Barkov has been very passive.
Yeah, he's got, you know, he's got a, it's funny you say passive, because he's got a deceptive game too, where he doesn't look like, you know, it's a lead, he's got a little bit of that Kucherov trait where he doesn't look like he's fully immersed, and then he has the ability to beat you in a totally different way. They're not hitting on all cylinders as they did through the course of the year. And you know, I mean, Washington pushed them pretty far. And save a Garnet Hathaway missed empty net, you could be having a different conversation right now. But they got the breaks they've needed to get where they are. And we'll just see if they are, you know, just because they've taken a step as an organization doesn't mean they're all the way there yet. Mm.
Speaking of messaging from coaches to their team, what would Craig Berube be saying and working on with his team for a game two after the Blues were, I mean, full credit to Binnington in particular for them nursing it to overtime, but that was a pretty one-sided game last night. Colorado deserved to win and ultimately did win. So what will St. Louis take from game one?
That they're going to be fine. You know, you lose an overtime on the road to a team like Colorado who had a couple more days rest, 4 or 5 days more rest than you did, but came out and you know, you played with them. And I would go back probably, you know, if I'm Craig Berube to game, what it would be, two against Minnesota when they got pretty manhandled in Minnesota. And game two and three, actually. And they were down 2-1 in that series to Minnesota. And they figured out a way to get on the right side of the puck. And I think they're a hard team to play against. And I think that has a cumulative effect when you're a hard team to play against. And, you know, and it may be felt more by Colorado in the second and third and fourth game when you go up against that group. And you realize how much you don't like Ryan O'Reilly or, you know, and you don't like taking faceoffs against him. And so it doesn't surprise me the outcome of the first game. And, you know, Colorado's a really good team, but I think St. Louis is going to give them a good series here, guys. And I think there's an acquired taste to watching St. Louis and acquired taste that's the opposite, that's not a good taste in your mouth to playing against them in a multiple-game series.
I go back to the Cup team, though, Pooley, the smothering defense, just monsters all the way through, and that fourth line. And I know St. Louis is a good team, but from a matchup standpoint, does that make you a little more nervous? And just the fact that Colorado is also on a next level.
Colorado is on the next level. And, you know, we'll start there. I mean, they're really good. And, you know, and the question I had about Colorado was Kemper going to be the guy in the playoffs? And was he going to be able to do it? And it looks like he is. But, you know, St. Louis is different on defense, I would say. They're not, you know, they don't have Pietrangelo but I still like their team. They're pretty big and physical. They have different components up front, but I think, you know, I think Thomas and Kyrou are both different players than they were. And you see Kyrou in that tying goal last night. I mean, I think they have a little more offense than they had the first time around in terms of an individual game breaker, particularly with those two guys.
Garbage bag day in Toronto and in Pittsburgh. We'll start in Toronto. You told us Monday you didn't think that the Leafs would make a move with Sheldon Keefe, and that was reiterated by Brendan Shanahan yesterday. Dubas will be back. Keefe will be back. And very much the messaging seemed to be that it'll be more, if there's changes, it'll be more, well, obviously there'll be something that'll be cap-driven, but also more tinkering than big changes. Although there appeared to be also a little bit of wiggle room on that in terms of players. What was your overall takeaway, specifically on the roster, from what you heard yesterday from Dubas and Shanahan?
Well, I don't think we should be misled by the fact that it was incredibly calm and, you know, and measured by Brendan Shanahan in the presser. I mean, he put everything to rest right away, which is a smart thing to do. He came out with a statement. He put all questions aside about his general manager and his coach and essentially his core group. That doesn't mean those saved conversations are going on behind closed doors. JR, at all. And I would expect it would be very animated in that grouping and very challenging. They have to. It has to be. And I would also, I mean, I think, you know, there's a thought that Brendan Shanahan isn't, you know, doesn't have bosses, or and he does, clearly. And there were questions that would have to be answered in that direction as well. But, of course, at every set of exit meetings, you hear the same things. You hear how much management likes their group, and you hear how much the players like each other. And I think that's a nice thought on the quality of people we have in our business, but it's not always the clear path to victory. And I think there has to be some sandpaper and friction and challenge within an organization. And I think it's there in Toronto. It's not there on the surface for the fans to see visibly, but it has to be there amongst the players as well. And, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't know whether you guys caught the pressers or whether you had reason to, when the Minnesota Wild made moves at the trade deadline. They brought in Nick Deloria from Anaheim. They brought in Jacob Middleton from San Jose. They brought in Marc-Andre Fleury. And all three, I was struck by all three, talked about how great the locker room was and how welcome they were. And this was the best locker room and how good they were going to be together. And this was just magnificent. This is the best group of guys. And it was so over the top. And it was, so they were either convincing themselves or it was that great. But they lost in the first round in six games, you know. And sometimes it's easy to be comfortable. And I would say, I'm going to bring it right back to the Senators right now. I think what Brady Tkachuk is doing right now is going to help the Senators immensely. Because as much fun as it looks like Brady is having, supporting his brother Matt and sitting in the stands, it's hard. It's hard to watch hockey when you're not involved. And he's going to bring back a painful lesson. And the deeper Calgary goes, and the more he watches, the satisfaction his brother is getting, the harder it's going to be for him. And it used to frustrate me, guys. And early on in my career, I played the escape route just like everyone did. You know, the season ended and I was gone. And I didn't watch. And it was easier not to watch then because there weren't as many games on TV. But I didn't watch. I didn't want to know what the team that beat me was doing. And I got a good lesson from that, from a veteran player that said, watch and put yourself in that same position and make it hurt and make it be painful. And if I were, you know, in that Leaf grouping yesterday, I would say you better not be on the Italian Riviera, the French Riviera 2 days from now, paying no attention to what's going on in hockey. You better be watching Tampa, and you better be putting yourself in the same situation saying we should be playing against Florida. It shouldn't be Ross Colton. It shouldn't be Nick Paul. It shouldn't be Nikita Kucherov. It should be us. And make yourself do that. And in a weird sort of way, because of his family support, Brady Tkachuk is making himself do that. And as much as it looks like he's enjoying himself, he's learning valuable lessons, guys, and how hard it is, how painful it is. He'll watch Matt limp out of the locker room after the game. And he'll put himself in that situation and say, I want to be limping out of a locker room after a game in the second round.
I don't think people realize, Pooley, how often through the media or even exit interviews I'm in, how much ass-kissing the players do to try to get a job back, too, about how great it is and how much I love you. You guys have the best program ever. Okay, simple question for you, and I know this is going to go national. Would you stay the course with Nylander at 26 years old or move past him?
I've already said it on national TV after the game. I think a core piece has to be changed in that group.
Yeah.
And he's the one that fits. And it's not a direct statement about him as it is that you have to change your core piece, I believe. The same voices have been amongst each other now six straight years in the playoffs. And you can't change John Tavares, simply can't. No move contract. You're not going to change the Rocket Richard winner. You're not going to change Mitch Marner, and Morgan Riley plays a different position and just signed a new long-term contract. So the one that comes to light is the one that can have the most impact on change because it'll bring the most back. And the fact that he, you know, earns what he does makes him attractive to other teams. He can be an 80 or 90 point guy, but he could also bring you back components that would change exactly what we're talking about in that locker room. It's a very comfortable locker room, guys, and the Leafs have huge resources, and they spend all around the cap, and they make it so that every aspect of it is so first class and so comfortable, and that's great, unless it's too comfortable. And, you know, unless it's not, it doesn't hurt enough. And that's where you have to get to. You have to get to the fact that you hate losing so much that you're not willing to accept it anymore. You're not willing to go to that breakup meeting and say, you know, this is a great group. We love each other. Everything is great. We want to bring it all back. You didn't win. And that's the game we're in. And not only did you not win, but you haven't got past the first round in six straight years.
Lose tonight. No post-game buffet. Huh? There, put a little something on the line. Okay.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, this is a kind of a crazy story, guys. But when I first got to Boston in 1990, we didn't have organized team meals on the road. And so you'd play in St. Louis on a Sunday, and you were responsible for your own pregame meal, trying to find a restaurant that was open at noon on a Sunday to eat a pregame meal. And Harry Sinden's thought process was, at that time, it's too comfortable. It's too comfortable to just walk up the stairs into a banquet room and have a big fancy pregame meal, and you eat too much because you think it was crazy. We had to lobby to get pregame meals on the road, and he thought it was too comfortable, and you know he wanted to make it hard for you. So I mean, if we went to the finals, we were the President's Cup team, but we eventually got our pregame meals on the road.
Was some of the thought if you went into like Detroit and Philly and New York, you'd actually get into fights before the day of the game?
I'll tell you what, you know, you laugh, Simmer, but you think.
Oh no, no, some of those inner cities back then. Wow.
I know, and you're trying to you Detroit, you know, you're in downtown Detroit, you're trying to find an Italian meal at 12:30 on a Sunday because Harry doesn't want you to eat too much, and you know. There's something to be said for the comfort, but I mean, God, we got to eat, guys. We got to eat here.
Real quick thought. We've kept you a little bit over time, but I just want to touch on Pittsburgh quickly. Crosby confirms he's back for three more years, he says, but Malkin and Letang are UFAs. It would make sense to, as long as Crosby is running it back, you'd want those guys back. But do you think ultimately it's going to happen and Pittsburgh will pay up, or do you think one or both could be gone?
I wouldn't be surprised if one or both were gone. I think the defenseman is the one that stays in Letang. And, you know, it just depends. You know, I think less is known about Malkin as a person and exactly what he might do. You know, so I could see change coming. I think Brian Rust is the one you're not talking about, who, you know, plays with Sydney and who will be back as a UFA.
Right.
But there could be change on the front in Pittsburgh.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the time and the insight, as always, and look forward to chatting with you again on Friday.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Enjoy the hockey.